Welcome in to the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. I am not Nick Kyprios, but I'm sitting where Nick usually does, and it makes me feel very strange. I am very grateful to be joined today by my good pal, J.D. Bunkus. Bunk, welcome.
I'm going to feel so naked during the show. Thank you for having me. I just realized that this headphone jack doesn't work for the thing. I don't think I've ever done a show like Raw Dog before.
Where you just have to trust.
No headphones?
I have no choice.
Why not?
I can't remember a show because it's like, you know what it sounds like in my ear? Like, the Charlie Brown teacher.
Not only do we have Bunk here for the first time in studio, we have him headphoneless. So looking forward to that.
It's a nightmare.
You know, I don't get a lot of opportunities to move over to the big desk. And I was so excited. And this guy just comes in. I invite him in. He's like, oh, I'm sitting at the big desk.
Bunk's here for the first hour. Sammy's going to join me over here for the second
hour.
I was going to sit at the big desk. But
And I said what exactly right away, where we're like, obviously go sit.
So I will say, I like it way more over here. I am completely dreading going there.
I don't know why you sat there.
Well, because
this is the Kip spot, the host chair.
The first man who speaks sits over there.
So you're just admitting that Kipper is the big dog.
Buddy, it's not the real Bourne and Kipper show.
Yeah. They don't need to be like, it's the real Bourne. Why aren't you real Bourne?
I don't know. Because no one wants to pretend to be me.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us today. We're on Sportsnet 590, Sportsnet 360, and Sportsnet Plus. You can find us wherever you find your podcast, and please text us today at 590-590. Second half of the show, McKee and I are going to take some texts and talk about all things NHL-wide, Leafs, whatever it may be. So
big chair Sammy hour.
We're not allowed to talk about the Leafs in the second hour, or else we'll get CRTC complaints.
Which, by the way, Bunk, that did happen. This is Leafs hour.
What?
Yeah, that happened. Someone complained in the NHL hour that we talked too much Leaf. They complained to the CRTC.
Yo, I got to say, can I just do this quickly?
Yes.
The people who complain ever about free content, it's got to be the most insane. Like, I think that's the craziest thing you can do. Well, like, you can take your pants off, you can run through the square and, like, start yelling stuff. That, to me, I'm like, I could see how I could get there.
Yeah.
I could never see myself being like,
time to report a show for talking about the Maple Leafs.
So here's what I was thinking that they should have done on the show.
Yeah. News of the day. Bobby McMahon signed a 2-year contract with $1.35 million per season. Funny enough, Kip and I earlier in the week
were
talking about yesterday about a potential McMahon deal. And I said, would you do 2 times 1.25? And I believe Kip said yes.
No, he yelled. We got in a yelling match yesterday over this exact topic where he was like, you know, with a good playoff run and all he's going to be making 2.5. He could make that much. And he yelled at me about it.
He was trying to drive up another Leaf price.
Yes. And I mean, that was it. I was like, we do that in Toronto where everybody gets so excited and horned up. And it's like, this guy's playing well. Better give him $3 million a year. And we forget he was in the ECHL literally 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And they signed him to this contract. And I can, if I was Kipper, I know exactly what the take would be. It would be like, that's a bad contract for Bobby McMahon. You know, the Leafs got a steal, and they shouldn't have signed that when he did, but he did it. So,
boys, this is why Kipper sits in the big dog chairs, because even when he's gone, you guys are like, let's pretend to do Kipper's take.
Well, it's just like, people come here for the show. It's like, I got like 15 tweets about, you are right, rub it in his face. And it's the first time I was ever right.
He didn't even get to do it today.
You know what it kind of reminds me of? Justin Hall.
Yeah.
Remember when Justin Hall got his contract and people were like, whoa, already? And it was like a $2 million a year deal. So it was more than what Bobby McMahon got.
Yep.
But everyone looked at that contract the second it happened and said, this guy was just in the AHL. He was a bust of a pick. What are you doing giving him this kind of extension, this kind of term? And it did kind of end up backfiring because they could have had McCann instead of Hall had they not done that contract. But ultimately, it ended up being a good deal for all parties involved. This is a little less money, but I think you just look at sort of using the same template as Justin Hall. Hey, if you're getting a right shot D who you think can move the puck a little bit and kill a penalty for you, that has a pretty pretty stock value. It's hard to go below that. And the way I look at Bobby McMahon is, hey, you got a depth forward who's basically going to be making close to the minimum, who's got size and who can forecheck. That's worth at least $1 million. Good deal. Like, I don't know how you could say not good deal. He has to be terrible.
Yeah, no, I know. And you look at you know, there's 32 teams now, and you look at the bottom of most rosters, a guy like McMahon has legit value. The comparable for me was a guy that you and I guyed up once upon a time, Pierre Engvall. When we were like, is this guy a guy? Is he a guy? Early on, they gave him a two-year extension. He made 1.25, 2021 and 22.
So this is the going rate.
It kind of is. It's like you have shown you are out of the AHL.
Yeah.
We like you enough for 2 years. And this, to me, is what should happen with Simone Benoit right now, where you say, I know it looks like you're the guy out of the lineup, and you might be game one or two. We see you as being Joel Edmondson. Watch him be that guy for us. We're giving you the contract to show you that we have the faith that you can do this. Sorry, it doesn't feel great right now. Maybe you get in, but at least you lock him up and, you know, don't risk losing him.
So my only thing with that is, if you're tree living, do you want to jump at that when maybe you can just sign Joel Edmondson to that?
I guess it depends where Edmondson.
Like, they just have a lot of those dudes.
He's an RFA too, Simone Benoit. So they have the control over him going into the offseason. So I would imagine No, he was a UFA.
Okay, so then can I ask you guys a question?
28.
Yeah. If you're him, because like we agree, it's impossible. Like, if you love this deal, if you're like, oh my God, I love this deal, it's kind of crazy because it's Bobby McMahon and he was
it's a hard one to have a really strong opinion.
Guys, I love this deal. Okay. I love Bobby McMahon. No, I'm like Team McMahon all the way.
I really like him too, and I believe that this is a favorable contract for the Leafs. I'm just saying that for you to be like, this is a foundational moment for the franchise, a seminal moment. Like, no, it's a step forward that they signed to a depth contract, and they've done it before. And like we said, if you think you're a guy, if you're in the Pierre Engvall class of can play in the NHL better than the AHL, you get the $1 million plus a little bit of bonus on top.
There you go.
If you're him, though.
Well, this was going to be our boy's take, Kip. It was going to be that he shouldn't have signed it.
So what? But what do you got? Like, do you think that, like, should he have bet on himself? Should he have Fred VanVleet?
Never made more than 80 grand a year. The first time someone offers you 2.7.
He played 10 games in the AHL until this season. Yeah. Of course you take this contract. Like, he could.
But I think, you know, there is argument on the other side where you've already got 10 goals in 40 games. Yeah, and it's like,
I'm not risking it, man. Like, I think this guy, how old is he? Is he 27, 28 year old? Mm. He spent way more time in the ECHL than he has in the NHL. You're getting giving me $2.7 million for, you know, scoring 10 goals in 40 games. I am snapping that baby up.
Listen, I'll be Kipper. Give me that chair.
You think he should have, you know, gone into the playoffs with the long 7-game run that the Leafs are going to have and his one goal that he scores where it's like his value is going to be so much more than it is right now?
Here's what I would say. It's probably smart because what could he really have changed the contract by?
Well, there is, what if he becomes a third liner for this team who scores 5 more goals this year and a few in the playoffs? Is he worth season two?
That's what I'm saying is, to me, I'm not doing it if I'm him for this reason. You know when you get the cash out on a betting app?
I do.
And you're like, I should take this. This is more money than I've had before. And they're giving me the money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary to wait for the rest of it. But the real reason they're offering you the cash out is that they think there's a good chance you're going to win.
Yeah.
And so...
Oh, this was 100%. That's a great analogy. They gave McMahon the cash out.
Yeah.
Take the cash out before we have to pay you the full value.
They told him...
Smart move.
Cash out, cash out, cash out. And then he was like, and he hit the button.
Yes.
And now, and you know what the big fear of the cash out is? Is that if you win, you're like, oh my God.
I left X on the table.
Oh. And so for a guy who, as you've said, has not made a lot of money and may not have an opportunity because he's older to not make a ton of money later, if he does have an incredible playoff run, like... Do we all like the Tavares, Yarncroc, McMahon line?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did we all not like him playing with Matthew Nyes and that little Bash Brothers-y feel that the two of them had?
Loved it.
So have there not been at least a couple of outcomes where you could see this guy having a down-the-lineup impact? Could we not see...
Listen to Bunk talking himself into a take where McMahon's a $3 million guy.
I'm saying... The general manager also is horny for big fellas.
Yeah.
he's like...
Borderline.
I don't think that's how
borderline,
he phrased it.
Yeah, borderline. I'd say so. He's like, how tall is that guy?
Like, whatever.
He's going to come in the studio like, how tall are you, Sam?
exactly. Yeah, his favorite member of the Neil Kipper and Bourne show is, no question, Sam. Okay? He likes the lighthouses. Yeah. So if you're the big lighthouse guy and you start in the playoff series and you... lay a couple big hits and you have a couple of nasty playoff goals, I think, reasonable to expect that you could have gotten maybe two.
Once upon a time, I did team in the NHL played a game on the same night this year, and I bet all 16 games in a parlay.
Yeah,
that was like a fun night.
I remember this.
And I had hit, I had like 14 of 14 at one point. And I forget how small the bet was, $5, but I was offered $500 to cash out. Potential winnings were $32,000.
Yeah.
And I remember texting with Bunk, like, what do I do here?
Don't.
Oh, yeah, he was... I regret to this day not cashing
it out. Yeah, you not
See,
cashing
I lost
it out.
In overtime.
No. You not cashing it out is getting slashed in the knee next game and going down and never playing another NHL game.
Sometimes you got to cash out.
Yeah. No. You're not all degenerate, Mike.
No, this isn't degenerate. You never look at gambling at what the cash out is. Let me give some advice. Where's my camera? Okay. Boom. Here. Don't do it. You want to just be living a normal life like you could just get this. The bet that you made, that is the sunk cost. It's never what it's offering you. Yeah. The bet is the bet. You bet $5, mm-hmm. you're going to lose $5.
Yeah.
You never had $500. Mm. You bet it to win 32 grand. If you would have won that 32 grand, you're going, oh my God, this is an actual life-changing amount of money for me.
I agreed with you then, and I agreed with you now. I didn't do it.
Yeah, if you cash it out for $500 and you win,
it affects
welcome to never sleeping again.
Well, I'm not sure the $5 to win $32,000 is the right level of gamble.
You're
here.
14 out of 14.
Like, no, but like,
yeah,
I don't
guess. Hey, guess
I don't
what?
Know.
This is a one-off long shot.
Yeah,
stupid bet that the two of us were.
I do think that this was the right move for him. I really do.
Yeah.
I just think there's a lot of risk, man, and it's a hard game. It's a fast league. One fall.
All right.
You have one chance to get paid. They throw 2.7 in
one
front of you.
One fall. He's a young, healthy 27-year-old.
We're 11 minutes into the McMahon conversation. Yeah. We got other
this
stuff
what,
to get to.
People want. This is what the people
the hot
want.
McMahon talk.
Ultimately, though, I think you can look at this as an awesome story for him. Like, for him to... Sure. He was scratched. The game that Tavares and Marner both were sick. He got scratched.
Yeah.
Comes in, gets a hat against the Blues, was it? And then, like, just found confidence and has been a really good contributor to the team ever since, and then find a way to... And, like, he's a healthy scratch. He cleared waivers. He's got offered $2.7 million.
Yeah.
Snap that baby up.
It is a good one for the Leafs here. So he looks like... When you look at their lineup, their forward lines, you're like, I'm okay with wherever they have him, by and large. But they did shuffle things up again. You know, we've got Bertuzzi, Matthews, Yarncroc right now. Mitch Marner's still out. With an injury of some variety, which is something. Do we want to start with Marner?
Do you want to hear the coach talk about it? It's a pretty short clip.
Yeah, let's see.
It's clip three, Derek.
Do we have it? No. Let's go through. Bunk can't hear anything.
Tell me what he did skate today. Okay. So, you know, read into that what you will.
Can we have that one more time?
No update on Mitch. Other than he didn't skate today, so, you know, read into that what you will.
No update on Mitch. Read into that. Or he didn't skate today. Read into that what you will.
I don't like that.
No, nor should you.
Well, why would anyone say read into that what you will?
I think the implication is he's not close. That's a real concern here.
Yeah, if you're telling the hounds at Leafs practice to read into something.
Yeah, why would you do that? I actually think that, like, this is not a huge deal, but I actually kind of think that that's dumb by Sheldon. Like, just say you will get an update soon.
It feels like a little bit of don't ask me about it for a bit. Like, it's going to be a ongoing thing, which... You know, Mitch Marner hurt. He's had a high ankle sprain years ago. But, you know, we talked to Kip, seems to know people about things, and he had some concern, mentioned ankle is one of the potential things that is something that can nag and never get back to 100%, or even knee. Mm. You know, it's unlikely it gets back to 100%. So, I don't know. Some concern there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's how I would have not been concerned if he was like, he's back in the lineup Thursday, he's feeling great.
Yeah, right.
Like, nice.
Yeah,
it was a weird fall that he took after, because he fanned on the one against the Bruins where everyone was like, if he had a shot that, they would have won. And then he comes around, falls on his knee kind of awkwardly, kind of twisted around. I don't know what the hell happened to him, but I mean, pretty clear here that he's probably not going to get to 100 points again, which
that's a killer.
A tough
he's
break for
sniffing
him.
Sniffing at 98, 99. You know, right now he needs 24 points to get there. He's got 18 games left. So it's within
doable.
His points per game pace.
Yeah, but if he gets back.
If he gets back.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
You know, the only, if I'm trying to do optimism spin zone, read into it what you want. Because read into you want, that's your pick your own adventure, right?
Mm.
Read into it what you want is potentially, hey, we lost those two games to the Bruins, and now we're not catching them. We ain't catching anybody. We're stuck in our lot in life, and so we're going to play things uber conservatively and let the guy heal because we don't really need him
Love
to come back.
Take. Love that.
Or that Sheldon's pissed off that they're being so cautious with him, and he wants him in the lineup because he's desperate to win every game.
Mm. Yeah.
That's the Leafs are 9 points behind the Bruins right now, and they are 8 points clear of Tampa. Like, we are at the point where they are finishing third in the Atlantic. They do have games in hand on Boston, three games.
Have they ever done that before?
What's that?
Finished there? Locked into a playoff spot before the season.
Every
start?
November, yeah, usually.
Has that ever happened before?
Yeah. But it is funny that this year, at least, they don't know who they'll be playing, though it looks very likely to be Boston.
It sure does.
Because Florida came back on Dallas down 3-1 last night. 3-0.
They're down 3-0.
Yeah, and one in regulation.
Yeah, one in regulation. Mm-hmm. On a power play goal. Their power play looks dynamic. So
Jake Andrews.
Better hope the Leafs can figure out their power play. I mean, their penalty kill, because it's not looking so hot.
Mm.
Yeah.
Before the show, we talked a little bit about Marner, the shape of their team, how it's going to look going forward. I don't know. I thought you had an interesting angle on the Mitch thing.
Well, I think what you're looking at here without him in the lineup is going to be a reminder of how this sounds stupid. Just bear with me.
Okay.
How important he is. Like, yes, the $11 million winger is important. But that if you're trying to project Leafs rosters of the future, like, okay, well, when is it going to change, right? Would they ever break up the quote-unquote core four? I think that the idea that the Leafs are ever going to have an off-ramp through trade with one of the three younger guys, Marner, Matthews, and Nylander, that's done. Like, I just don't see a scenario where the Leafs get bounced by the Bruins in the first round this year and they go into an offseason and say, well, we're going to try to entertain a Mitch Marner trade, even though he's only got 1 year left on his deal and the team that's going to be acquiring him is going to have to pay him a buttload of money, and that all of a sudden the Leafs are going to be saying, what can we do? How are we going to improve this? Can you turn this guy into a defenseman? That used to feel like a reality. That was an off-ramp that we had for changing the Leafs' core look. And to me, it's like, this
Mitch
is actually...
Mitch needing a contract totally puts a... You're not going to get value back for him.
And he has no move. I just don't think that this is ever now a reality. Like, to me, the Leafs, and even part of the reason that they weren't desperate at the trade deadline, is because they know they're locked into this team until John Tavares is off the books. And then we'll see moving forward what they do with the Tavares contract, like how much of a haircut they get him to eat, whether he's with the team at all if he refuses to do that. But like, any idea that we ever had of looking at a Leafs team that was not going to involve these three on major tickets, I think that went out the window when they decided to fire Kyle Dubas, that they went into an offseason with a brand new general manager and with William Nylander needing a new contract and then re-upping that in the season. Like, to me, there's no stakes for these three guys this year. There's no like, hey, Mitch, you have a poor playoffs and maybe you're the guy to go for a defenseman. It's like, nah, I don't think that's a reality.
If you're entertaining trading Mitch, if you're trading him after they lose in the first round with which means he probably was very similar to some of the other years that he's had in playoffs. Mm-hmm. He needs a new massive contract. Mm-hmm. Like, you couldn't be trading that asset at a lower value.
So true.
Like, there's just no spot where you'd be like, you know, a team would still...
The point of all this is they're stuck with these guys.
You're not getting a third and a fifth round pick for Mitch Marner here. I'm not saying that, but it's not going to be close to what you think you're going to get back for a guy of his.
If you'd done it last year after they lost.
But even then, I guess you have the extra year. You still get way more value last year, clearly. But this offseason, you could never have an asset with less value than him going into that.
Like, you agree? Like, because it feels like one of those, if you're just realizing now it's too late, and that's how I feel with this. I'm like, oh my God. There's no
chance. Suddenly this, you're going to watch this core of Matthews, Marner, Nylander this year, and even if they don't win,
next
you're going to see it again next year.
Yes. There's no potential, well, if they don't get out of the first round, this could be consequences. Like, that's done.
No move for Austin. No move for Willie. You know, Mitch's.
Yeah.
I think we all know what the move is if they don't get out of the first round.
What is it?
It's the coach. Clearly.
Yeah, well, that's
your only move, really. Yeah.
I'm throwing this at you guys, like, on the spot. We never discussed this, but...
That's okay.
Could you... The other weird one would be, could the move be Riley?
Just can't. You just don't have any D.
It's a D for D.
Yeah, I imagine if you're like, they're going to give us Slavin, and we're going to try it with a D-oriented D-man or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you might consider it, but it just seems... Like, the one-for-one trades we see in the NHL are so rare, and it's usually like, this guy we thought was spectacular has really been disappointing. You know, Mittelstadt and Byram just did a thing.
There's two separate conversations to me with that, because on the surface, hockey-wise, I'm like, I'd consider it. But the other side of it's like, he's the number one heart and soul guy that cares the most and is, like, most well-spoken and seems like he should be the captain. And there's two separate conversations to that. There's two separate different guys with him in the playoffs versus him in the regular season. It's a very complicated one. I think it's one that I would consider for sure.
Of course, it's complicated.
But, like, I don't think – what's his – I mean, if they all have no move clause, he definitely has one. So
I'm
you,
actually not he, sure if he has one or not, but I'm
mean,
sure
they
he
all
does.
Got
he
one.
I'm sure he does, yeah. He did, because, well, he actually took
David
a bit of a haircut.
David Kampf got one, so I would imagine that he has one.
Bert has one. Domi has one.
Yeah, and in that case, too, you look at it and it's just, hey, if he has that measure of control, you can't get back equal value. I just – like, just to play devil's advocate, like, I agree with you guys. Yeah. It's complicated. It's unlikely. It's whatever. This is a stupid hypothetical. But if you do have this much of a track record in your regular seasons of, hey, you know, we win a lot of games without this guy.
Yeah. It's, again, it's just the least viable thing because you don't have any D. So, like, unless, yeah. And there's just so rare for a one-for-one trade. Mm-hmm. Everyone's been looking at this. If it doesn't work, it's because they haven't had enough D and yeah. They have too many forwards. You're right. They're kind of stuck with this look. So one of the things we're going to do in the back half of the show is look at who the core has had over the years and compare the best team B's that they've ever had and ask if it's this year and why it isn't, presumably.
Did you want to talk about goalies? I saw you had Woodley on your podcast today, and I saw the quote that he had about Wall, and it was pretty strong.
He loves Wall.
It's pretty strong from a guy who knows everything about goalies. So, like, you know my thoughts on it in terms of who they want. We've talked about this, who they want.
Oh, it's not even an opinion on who they want. They want the kid. Like, they want Wall.
Yeah.
Like, that's a matter of, like, essentially public record.
Yeah.
It's like, you want to try and dig into who they want. It's like, you can scratch the little level of the surface and, like, you'll get it. Like, they want it to be Wall. I think the more interesting point of conversation with the goaltenders right now is, like, how do you handle it moving forward if it takes Wall a little bit of time to kind of find his game? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think he's been poor by any stretch of the imagination in the three games he's been back. He actually had one really good start, and then he had one that wasn't good enough against the Bruins, and then one where he let in two bad goals.
Yeah.
Okay? Samsonov is playing his very best. You're looking at a situation, I think, right now where you haven't played in a week, right? Essentially a week.
Mm-hmm.
You got a game Thursday night. You're probably going to lean with the Samsonov. Like, it doesn't... Like, they've gone to Wall before. They can say that they're playing the calendar, but you're probably going to lean to Samsonov. And then it's like, are you just going to do the split? But what happens if Samsonov continues to be, like, the better of the two who's actually winning the games, but you still do believe that Wool is the guy and you're trying to give him as much of the net? Like, can you just flat out just continue to do the 50-50 split? Because I think you kind of can. I think that's maybe the route here.
Yeah, I think you save yourself a lot of explaining to the guys and playing favoritism and hurt feelings. And you say, until there's reason not to, we're just going to take turns, fellas. Like, you know, Wool's up next. It's been a week. You'll go again Saturday night, Sammy. Like, I think that's kind of how that ends up looking. You know, you're right. Wall had one good showing. The Boston ones were tough, but I like the idea of throwing them back into the fire and be
same.
Like, you know, it's Boston. It's a hard game. Didn't get the wins. Didn't play great in a back-to-back, but you got to get him going. You need him at his best a month from now.
That's it. Is if you are believing at all that he needs run, you can't just play Samsonov and say we're riding the hot hand and he's getting more net. To me, it's like you have two scenarios. One is Samsonov remains the hotter of the two, and they split the net equally. The other is that Wool becomes the hotter of the two, and Wool actually just takes over the net, and he's becoming, like, the far more primary actually getting starts. I don't think there's a reality in which Wool, regardless of how poorly he may play, if he was to play poorly, that they would go, Samsonov's getting three, and you're getting one. Like, you're getting 25% of the starts.
You know, it's fascinating to think if he's not playing well by the postseason or even is just okay, could the Leafs be the rare team who legitimately uses both goalies in a playoff series?
I hate that.
I hate it too. But
that's one of my least favorite things. The only time I like the multiple goalie move is when you have, like, the established starter that has a bad couple games and you put in the backup to kind of change the mojo. Like, they've done it. It's happened in years past, like, with a Holtby. When he was bad again
Grubauer
for the put Grubauer,
Murray and Fleury.
Who was the goalie in the backup in Chicago for Crawford? Scott Darling. Scott Darling came in a couple games for him when he was bad. Like, I feel like when there's a starter and a backup delineate, it's much easier to just be like, shake up the team.
How about when Boston last year? They didn't even go to Swayman.
But that's the thing. I mean,
till seven.
I just think that's a way more complicated thing in the playoffs. If you have one, if you have two, you don't have one in the playoffs to me. Like, it's a much more easy shake-up move as opposed to trying to pick who the goalie is in the playoffs. It's terrifying to me.
To me, it's the exact same thing, like, when it comes to the outcomes. I think that you could see a scenario where Samsonov gets game one, and if he performs badly, then Wall's immediately in the net. if Wool wins the net and he loses game one and he plays badly,
go back to Wool.
Go back to Wool.
Yeah.
Like, I think that it's just, it's going to be two standards that you might say unfair and you might say meritocracy or whatever, but I just, everything you listen to and hear, the Leafs just down, they're goaltending coaches, their front off, like everyone believes in Wool.
One guy's under contract next year, one guy's not.
Well, but also, I don't even Samsonov, think the way he plays is part of this, right? Yes. Like, you don't, he doesn't look trustworthy.
Yeah.
You know, he's bad when he's too busy, and he's too busy when games are big. If you look at the arbitration that he went to with the Leafs, the case they made against him is that when the state, when the chips are down, when the stakes are high, his style does not work.
Yeah, they've said that publicly, and they've actually tried to, you know, when they first brought him in, they tried to tweak both he and Murray styles, actually.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think that their feeling was one guy was a little less receptive to the changes, or was actually implementing.
Which could be some resentment or reason they want Wool to win, as maybe they hold some of the, hey, this guy wasn't coachable as we wanted him to be. And
yeah, maybe. Yeah. Can I ask you guys one more Mitch question?
Please.
Mitch-related question before we take this break? The longer that Matthews goes, like when you guys said the lines there, you only told me one.
We got, you want it?
Well, no, it doesn't matter. It's more, it's more so like,
well, maybe people haven't seen
it. Well, yeah, we actually, Ward and I have always had a, we love talking about the lines and what we like about the lines.
Of course.
Okay. So you got Yarncroc, who is essentially the all reliable for this team, right?
Yeah. Like he's Kerfoot.
Yeah, he's the, what's it called? The tape.
The flex seal.
Flex seal.
The flex seal.
Flex seal.
He's the flex seal where they're like, new slap it on, flex it'll seal. Work. It'll help a line go.
Okay, you don't have headphones in. We did hear the drop.
Okay. Oh, did it happen before?
Yes. No, no, just now.
Oh,
but
okay, yeah.
After we
all
mentioned
right.
it.
Nice.
But,
hey, Rendale.
Let's just do visual meme.
So let's say the worst part of the Marner thing is realized. There was like real Matthews MVP talk. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, I thought that those Bruins games borderline played him out of that conversation just because they were such big games and he was so absent from them and whatever, flew. But let's say he doesn't, like this trend continues now because we all agreed that there was the, hey, maybe he had the flu, maybe he wasn't going very well. Like it was tough games against the Bruins.
Tough week.
If that extends now into the next couple of games, like what is that going to do to you guys mentally?
In terms of how you feel about Matthews?
Yeah, just like approaching the playoffs, Matthews, that impending, because if you were Mitch Marner, right, and it's not that he's never had success away from Mitch, right? Like, he's a dominant player. He's scored most goals 5-on-5 since entering the league, like all those things. Two things can be true. He's still obviously the best goal scorer on the planet, but if he's not able to kind of impose his will with these guys and these different looks, and, you know, we're going to talk about different, like, hey, moving the little pieces around in Team A and Team B, and we're discussing even the idea of ever moving off of Mitch Marner, like, what does that say, if anything, to you, if he does continue to kind of have middling numbers or doesn't feel as dominant while Mitch is out?
To me, it's playing into this fantasy that doesn't exist. Like, Austin Matthews' goals per game are the same with Mitch and without Mitch. And Mitch Marner in the playoffs has not made Austin Matthews into some, like, elite game breaker. In fact, they've both been pretty bad, you know, by and large. I thought last year they worked and were a part of it and came through. They did win a round, which we talked about before. People seem to forget.
They were, and they were very good.
They were
in that
very
first round.
Yeah,
they were the main reason they won. They had, I mean, how many points?
Oh, that line. Yeah.
So what do we do now?
The whole, I was like, they got outplayed in that series.
Oh, well, I mean, they outplayed the. Anyways.
Yeah.
We don't need to win
that. They lost in the weeds here. But no, so I think that anyone who is a goal scorer who plays with Mitch Marner is going to benefit. Mm-hmm. He is an awesome player. And I think he'd be great for Willie, just like he was great for John when John scored 47. Mm-hmm. Whoever plays with this guy is going to benefit. So, yeah, like he's a crucial whatever.
You can't change my opinion on Matthews. I have a very strong opinion is there that he is a breathtaking goal scorer, an amazing player, one of the best players I've ever watched play for the Toronto Maple Leafs, with or without Mitch Marner, and that in the big games, it holds me back from truly loving him. Because he's had he hasn't had the moments yet. I guess he was really good in that first round against Tampa, which will always be measured against what happened in those next five games where he got shut out and was a ghost and was not around.
It's amazing,
right?
Like
it's
how
just,
Florida colored the Tampa series, because those guys really did move the needle and made some big plays and big moments. But yeah, that Florida series, everyone's just like, oh, that invalidated.
It also doesn't help that the ones you go to before, you're like, well, surely there's this incredible other series. It's like, no, you just have the Tampa series.
There's one.
When you add, it's like, Columbus. Like, why wasn't there more there?
They scored an overtime winner in the bubble.
Yeah. Why wasn't there more against the Montreal Canadiens? Remember what the narrative was after the Canadiens?
He got put in his pocket by Philippe Deneau.
Yeah, but it was also them going to the media saying, well, we got chances.
We got lots of good looks.
He just didn't fall. It was like, okay, well, yeah. That starts to wear thin more so. So it's like when you say, hey, it goes or it evaporates or gets colored by the Florida series. I'm like, I think it's more colored by like the entire body of work than anything else. Like, he's played in a lot of game sevens and he still doesn't have a goal in one of them. Mm-hmm. You got to get one of those.
Yeah.
That would be really helpful.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Absolutely.
That would help the clutch narrative.
He is the guy, right? This whole thing is, you know, we're going to talk after the break about supporting Cass and stuff, which has never been the point.
No.
Right? It's never been like Andre Kasha is going to get them through. It's like these guys are going to get them through or it doesn't work. Now, I forget where I recently heard this, but like research on when players finally win around, and I apologize to whoever wrote this article, when they win around after they first break in the NHL, you know, for first-round picks. It's typically 6 to 7 years. It's a long time before most of these guys break through, win around, find it, you know, go from Steve Yzerman to Steve Yzerman.
Yeah.
Or Steven Stamkos to Steven Stamkos.
Or Ovechkin, who is really late.
So the time for these guys to be the guys is not over. But it's now.
It's absolutely now.
It's been now probably for a couple years, but it's now.
Dude, this just drove me nuts after the trade deadline. Like, I was losing it. I tweeted something about it. I basically did an entire two shows on it. Like, I don't want to make this seem like a straw man, because I think that's annoying when people kind of over-exaggerate something to this effect. Like, but this entire core four was supposed to be built on the idea that those guys would be so dominant that you felt the advantage night in, night out.
They should be better than the other team's top line.
Everybody else was like, when they were moving these deck chairs around, that it wasn't supposed to matter as much. And yet, like, here we are going into this discussion, and I know this one's for fun, but hey, which one of the pieces around them were supposed to be better? And you go, were you supposed to find diamonds in the rough? Yes. Were you going to have misses? Of course. There's no ever going to be a general manager that was going to nail every single one of these things and ever nail every single contract in the cap era. You were obviously going to have misses. You were obviously going to have stylistic fits. You had no margin for error, but you were supposed to have a constant. And the constant was that the four of these guys are just a force.
Yeah.
That the other side goes, oh my God, we hate this.
They're coming in waves.
But this is what I'm just talking about, where it doesn't happen for any 22-year-old core of a team.
Probably right.
It hasn't happened. There's nothing, you know.
Well, you know what's historical is they got paid earlier as the 22-year-old core.
Sure. They got paid like they had won the cup early.
You sacrificed that.
Yeah.
You sacrificed that forgiveness from the fan base that left the door the second you all went, no, 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 we want the most money and we're going to change the way contracts are done.
Sure.
Especially when they did it and then others.
But as an analyst, should be able to tease those things out separately.
Kind of.
You know, that they are, for sure, but that they are, as players, on the ice, devoid of contracts and money. Yeah. It takes some time and there's a learning curve and they can still become the guys I mentioned, the Yzerman, the Stamkos, whatever.
I agree.
But the way they're perceived is definitely through the lens of, oh, you want the money, you're the guys.
And you mentioned the supporting cast. Like, I'm going through these, like, for the exercise we're going to do after we break here. And, boy, there's a lot of zeros.
Hold on. But, okay, I agree.
Playoff series, as you know, you've watched playoff series your whole life, comes down to one of the guys in the bottom half of the lineup.
Max Talbot shoots two in game seven.
Kicking one in for you off his butt in the game seven. And it's just like they never got one of those moments ever.
Got an OT winner, buddy.
Definitely.
Yeah, and that's why they won the series. It's like you need these moments where one guy has a big moment and they just never got it. And I'm not absolving the core
That's not what it sounds like.
But it's just like,
but you're right that cores are often saved by someone else who gets in a big moment.
Yeah. Sure. And this is all I'm saying is
Ray Allen's three for LeBron.
It would be fine if you felt like it was really the cores that were letting them down and all the other guys were carrying the weight and you looked at the zeros and said, boy, if you could have just gotten one or two more. But it's nah. Usually the guys that are making you feel a little empty about it are the main guys. Mm-hmm. That's why, again, I like the idea that they didn't load up at the deadline this year, because what I'd like to see is what you just said in terms of teasing out when these guys are going to get there. I'm there with you. I'm going, these guys do look like they're more in their primes. That's why I think the Bruins games were so unsettling, is because people were seeing the winning streak and going, okay, we're cautiously, tepidly going to step forward and sort of believe that maybe you guys are maturing and that you are willing to win these hard matchups. And they beat the Avalanche, and you go, damn, they look good in that game. And then they played the bad Bruins, who have had their number, and it looked the exact same. Yeah. The exact same.
It didn't look the same, though.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The only thing is, I want to see them have that series against the Boston Bruins where they dominate. I want to see them have a series against the Florida Panthers where they look like they're the force of the series.
Like where they went into Edmonton, beat them three straight times in the Canadian division, and we went, oh my God, look out for the Leafs.
The world truly was ending. Justin Hall shut down McDavid for three straight games.
But
the world
really was ending. In the playoffs, impose your will, and if you guys lose the whole, like, oh my God, you didn't have enough, then good. Then you should actually be able to figure out, all right, what are the other pieces that they need around these guys? Let's sell other assets. Mm-hmm. Trade Easton Cowan. Trade whatever you need to get, because now these guys are good enough.
Right.
And they've proven
you're not sure enough about the core to do that.
I'm not sure enough that they've entered that phase of, oh my God, okay, well, they've hit the 27-year-old and they're definitely going to do it now. Like, I'm less sure about that part of it, even though we know the money part.
Yeah. All right, we're going to talk more about this after the break. You're listening to Real Kipper and Bourne. Mm-hmm.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, Real Kipper and Bourne Show. We are joined still by J.D. Bunkus, which is great, because he's going to help us parse through the Team Bs that the Leafs have had over the years. So it's become a running theme on this show, whether it's true or not, it's true. There's the Team A, which is the core guys who are here, and they've been a part of this whole thing. And every year, they try and tape on different pieces and try to make a Stanley Cup champion. Not sure if you guys know this. Hasn't happened yet. Mm.
Were you ever on, like, a Team B?
I don't think I've ever been on Team A.
No. had, like, anything, any type of... Because, like, I grew up at Whitehorse, UConn, and we used to have, Team A and Team B for hockey tournaments.
Yeah.
Because they would want to send as many kids down to get as much
legitimate, whole group of cast off.
Yeah, because they would be like, well, there's not enough hockey tournaments up in the north, right? Yeah. So when they send the kids down, they're like, we can't just only send 30 kids.
Right. All the kids got to go.
We got to send more kids. It's not all, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I made it.
Yeah.
But I had one year where I was on Team B.
Yeah.
And there was like truly nothing more intense that you wanted than to beat Team A in practices or to like do better in a tournament.
One of my favorite chirps was that Team Canada B could beat anybody at a hockey tournament too, but that take has kind of gone out the window now.
I don't know. I still think they'd be
competitive.
Wouldn't they be so fun though? Like, wouldn't Canada B be the team that we all rallied around?
For sure. Everyone Canada A would be like, those pretty boys on Canada A.
Just the worst thing you could do for your reputation is play for Team Canada.
Yeah, you want to be...
Who's their starting right winger for Team A?
One guy the one here. From Team A. He's like, I don't want to be with those prima donnas.
You want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
So looking at all the Team Bs, we're going back to the start of when John Tavares joined the team.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to read off all the names, but do you have a year where you go... In retrospect, that was the best Team B. And how does this year's group stack up to previous Team Bs the Leafs have had?
To me, it's a very obvious answer, and it is last year.
Mm. It's the best one?
Based solely on success. Meaning they won the first round since I was in high school.
Yeah.
And they had, you know, Ryan O'Reilly, Sam Lafferty, Nola Chari, Kerfoot, Bunting. Zach Aston-Reese, Hall, and Shen, as well as, you know, the other guys that are still on the team, Yarncroc, Knies, Kampf, those guys are still on the team or whatever. But to me, that deadline, and I'd hate to give Kyle Dubas credit for anything, but that deadline was the type of deadline that should have won this core more rounds than one.
But it's funny looking at that because so much of that was deadline. O'Reilly, Lafferty, Achari, Shen, that all came at the deadline. A lot of these other Team Bs were a part of the team for longer. Is there a year for you?
So I think this is I'm not trying to ruin the game.
Oh, here we go.
But
let me move these goalposts to see what
it
needs.
Yeah, just a touch.
Here we go.
Where it's like, are we getting the fully healthy team, like the fully right team? Like what?
I think
you're
going to pick the same team as me with that question.
Well, yeah, just because if that's the team, if that's the fully healthy team, and the it's the
Montreal.
It's the Montreal team.
Yeah,
no doubt about it. Like if you would have gotten the like fully healthy Foligno and the
fully healthy Foligno changes things for sure.
Dude, oh, Foligno. So we're moving goalposts then.
Oh, yeah, they got moved.
Okay, well, but that's the thing. Okay, but if we're playing this game...
Hockey's not allowed to happen where guys get hurt?
No, but here's the unfair part, is if we're talking about this year's core, right now, yeah. The guys around them are all healthy.
Yeah.
So it's like going into it, you would have felt the same way heading into the postseason. Like, we're doing it all
this
in the time
year,
capsule.
By the way, they had Jake Muzzin on the back end. Yeah. You had Spezza on the third line. Pierre Engvall. Bogosian was a part of it. You know, you had a lot of guys that you felt could contribute.
I don't know. The only thing is, too, is like on paper, you look earlier and you say, wow, they had Zach Hyman and they had Patrick Marleau and they had. Yeah. So I think you can spin it in terms of a talent argument. I also think if you're talking about the best core, is there. We're only doing post-Tavares.
Well, go ahead. Where are you going to.
Well, I was going to say kind of like the very first, the rookie year where they decided to keep all the own rentals, which turns out to be kind of like a bit of a mistake, probably.
They had Kadri, JVR, Bozak.
Yeah, is that if you, when you had that team felt a little balanced. They went out and got Brian Boyle and it's kind of, again, though, that's they're the babies. They're not who they are now.
Right.
So it's a tough one for me to do. I get it last year.
What year was that?
What, the very first year that they went?
16-17.
Yeah. 16-17?
Yeah.
So 16-17, yeah, that's, I'm just pulling it up here.
Yeah.
Like that is that's when it was fun.
But
that was the most fun.
That's when it was fun.
But also.
If you're asking me which one was the most fun, that is the answer for me.
Absolutely.
Not like, beating Tampa last year?
Well, yeah, no. That was great.
No? Three overtime winners?
No.
The thing is, we weren't beat down in 2016.
Yeah.
We weren't like, that was like when it was still the
just
hope.
Just happy to be
that's,
there.
Yes. That's what I'm saying is those were carefree. I remember where we were for some of those games, like hugging and having the time of our lives. And it was genuinely the feeling was.
Connor Carrick played six playoff games that year for the Leafs in that playoffs.
There you go.
Yeah. Martin.
At a moment.
Yeah, that decor was Connor Carrick, Martin Marincin, Nikita Zaitsev, Roman Polak, Jake Gardner, and Morgan Riley.
Good Zaitsev, though.
Good.
What's crazy about looking back through some of these teams is you go. If you remember the peak of their career, like, they had Joe Thornton, they had Patrick Marleau.
That's
they
what I'm
had,
saying.
You know, when you realize where these guys were at different stages in their career, it's a little different.
Can I tell you which team it definitely wasn't?
Which one?
2020, Dyson Barry year.
Yeah, well, that year, that team
the
was.
The non-playoff year.
Yeah.
That team was on the way out of the playoffs.
That's
what I'm saying. That year was the stinker year. That was this team has never been more fraudulent.
Kapanen, Robertson, Cece, Dermott, Janssen, Gauthier.
Can you give me one Riley Nash Leafs memory?
There was one. Did he play a single game?
Two games.
Got in.
Wore number 20.
He did wear number 20. I'm surprised they retired. I couldn't believe Edmondson got to wear it.
Wore number 20.
Yeah.
And my memory was people going, he's going to lock people down come playoff time. He's ready.
Because he had been hurt and then he showed up.
They LTIR'd him.
Yeah, but that was it. They LTIR'd him and they were like, wait till this guy gets in the playoffs and then he's locking everybody down. And lock people down, he did not.
No. He was hurt.
Those are my memories. Narratives and numbers.
2018, 2019, to me, was a really good one. Mm-hmm. Against the Bruins when they lost again in game 7 there.
You know what's funny is
Janssen, Dermott, Kadri, Kapanen, Tyler Ennis, which I just completely forgot was the thing.
He was actually pretty good
Jake Gardner, Patrick Marleau, Jake Muzzin, Trevor Moore, Zach Hyman, Ron Hainsey, Connor Brown, Nikita Zaitsev, Freddie Gauthier.
Great example of remembering names not where they were in their career because you hear Trevor Moore and you're like, they had a 30-goal guy or whatever Moore is going to be this year. And he wasn't at that point.
Absolutely. Body bags Zdeno Chara in that series.
He did.
Sent him packing into the boards really hard.
I was actually looking into this once upon a time. They have been competitive in these first round series that they've lost, so that they've actually won a lot of playoff games. Like if you're Austin Matthews, he's probably won 3 playoff games a year for 7 years. He's probably got 20 playoff wins or something.
Dude, you know what I'm thinking too with this question about the core and the things around them is so I think I'm with you, Bourne. Like looking at the teams, it's the
I want to talk about this year's team again before we're done.
We will. I think it is the North Division team in terms of deepest, and that was if they're healthy, like they probably go on a run. It's probably the best team that they had. I also think
Tavares got hurt there too.
For sure.
Yeah.
10 minutes into the first game.
I think that one of the big ones in this in terms of core around them is Jack Campbell that year was red hot and awesome. And if you're talking about like how you actually felt in net, out of all the goalies they've ever had, like playoff Freddie Anderson. Was always spooky. right?
Yeah, I liked it more than you guys.
This is I love. No, oh, are you kidding? I love Freddie Anderson. I still apologize for him to this day. Yeah. I still have a committee.
He's
still
my number friends. He's my number one Crosshairs guy.
Yeah, like it, we've had no question. Oh, yeah. Blood feud. It's almost ended our friendship at times. Yeah. But he's let bad goals in the playoffs. It was like, oh, okay, so this is where the friendship dies.
Yeah.
Samsonov last year, you felt good. Still, Ilya Samsonov. And Jack Campbell, we thought for a second, was like a guy. Yeah. The Oilers did too because they gave him all the money. They said, look at this guy. He's amazing. We should give him all the money. But if you were doing like the confidence rankings of the goaltenders, where they were at heading into the postseasons every single year outside of maybe Freddie year one, it's got to be Jack Campbell.
And this is the worst year by
far.
Far.
Unless that depends how you feel.
Well, there was some Vezina buzz for Jack Campbell during that season.
That's what I remember.
He was the first 3 months. Remember, we were doing 6x6 conversation.
Yeah. I remember that. And I said, I actually compared him to Cujo and said, give it to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a tough take.
I can't believe you brought that up.
I did. Yeah, whatever. I mean, I said a lot of dumb stuff. I talk for 2 hours a day every day. I say a lot of dumb stuff, buddy.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's almost like you're trying to.
What really stuck out to me going through all these is that this year isn't that bad in terms of like measuring up to what they've got. Like, it's not the best, but I do think that there is plenty there. If the Stars play, I guess the biggest difference would be at the point at where John Tavares is in terms of his play. That's not as high as it has been in years past.
But that's not a part of this exercise.
No, that's what I mean. But like, to me, the core around the Stars is good enough for them to win. Yeah. It just comes down to them being good enough for them to win. Again.
So, your thought on this core?
Yeah, this surrounding cast. I think that there's more here to be unlocked. I never felt like anyone was Tyler Bertuzzi, like a fifth guy who, had a 30-goal season and played and has had playoff success. Like, I feel like he could still, like, in those Boston games, as much as you felt bad about other things, you felt like, oh, that's it. That's the guy we thought we had there. You saw Domi being competitive. Like, there were these glimpses of, I think all we said a lot was that we wanted this team to be different. They didn't have to be better. We just needed a different look. They couldn't be the same. I feel like it is different. I don't know if it's going to be successful, but it's different.
So if I was really going to like boil this down in the most simplistic way, I felt good about the Leafs going into the postseason twice. It was
this year one? No.
It was last year, that team, and they won a playoff round.
Yeah.
And it was the North Division year where they were going to, and it wasn't just the Montreal Canadiens. We didn't know, and it's a bit fraudulent. It's hard to really figure out what they had because they played a bunch of bad teams essentially for the entire year.
Bunch of checked out teams.
Yeah,
that hated
like it's
being
just
there.
And it was in the bubble. There's all these different things, but I'm just saying, heading into the postseason, times where I was really allowing myself to believe and go, man, maybe they could make some noise.
Yeah.
It was those 2 years.
Yeah.
This year, what I will say is slotted in sort of third, where I'm going, if you believe that in the years past the defensive style has resulted too much that way where they couldn't get that secondary scoring, I just think I could see a scenario where Knies, McMahon, Domi, Bertuzzi, a lot of these other guys actually end up with a big goal in a playoff series, the one that you guys are talking about, and we'll see kind of how that materializes.
For sure, and I also think heading into it, like last year the big complaint was the Leafs are going to finish second in the division, and they're still going to draw Tampa. It was like, they can't get away from Tampa. You know, the Tampa Bay Lightning, at that point, they would have won the Cup the year before. This year, it's now feeling more like it's looking like Boston. I am the lone person, I feel like, that I ever talked to who's like, I don't think Boston's that great. Like, I know they just beat the Leafs a couple times. I got plenty of excuses why I don't think it went the Leafs' way in those games. I don't know. Did they have a shot this year?
I just got a great Robin text. I've been to the future. Prepare yourself for a first round exit.
Thank you. We get that text in response to just about everything.
Oh, I love that.
I do, before we lose Bunk, recommend that you check out his show, the JD Bunkus Show.
And Leafs Talk.
And
it's JD Bunkus Podcast, by the way.
Also a Bunk Show. Leafs Talk is really good. I get to hang out
sometimes.
Loves
him so much. It's his favorite show. That's why I got the name right.
He's like,
oh my God, every day I'm just always downloading the show. I don't know.
And follow Bunk on Instagram and Twitter at JD Bunkus. Bunk, thanks for joining us, pal.
Always a pleasure, fella.
All right, we will be back after this. We're going to talk to Kristen Shilton of ESPN, and we'll catch you in the NHL Hour.